And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day, despite the fact that there is a great tendency that isn't so great. There's a large tendency that isn't great at all. It's lamentable. It's pathetic. It's awful. It's destructive. It's a tendency to demonstrate against the President of the United States, the President of universities, the ex-President of the United States. Anybody you want is going to be subject to some of these crazy and awful and fanatical anti-Semitic demonstrators who now believe that, well, they've got the public on their side. We'll play you what some of that sounds like, actually, with some of the disruptions that have become very common. Speaking of disruptions, there's also a new wrinkle in the disruption of the presidential campaign by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. The Democrats are terribly concerned that he's going to take votes away from them. And the polls show that he takes votes away also from Donald Trump and basically gets people to vote for what exactly. We will get to that also on the Medved Show. But first of all, we have a problem here in the state of Washington that anybody who comes for a visit, anybody who lives here, anybody who has anything to do with the state of Washington, and particularly the Seattle metropolitan area, is going to be assaulted by a tremendous upsurge. It's really a plague. It's a pandemic. And yes, I think the word pandemic actually fits here. It's a pandemic of graffiti. And this is one of those things that when we first moved here, my wife had lived in L.A. all her life, and she had seen what happened to L.A. with the graffiti everywhere. And, of course, it spreads along with homelessness and the general just collapse of any kind of standards or rules or just normal decency and respect for the world you live in and the city or the community you live in. But the graffiti that has exploded here in Seattle, like, together with the explosion of homelessness, is so depressing and has become so overwhelming. And it's one of those things that as you're driving to downtown Seattle, it used to be you'd leave the airport, and particularly if you're driving up and you are into the city, and you're driving up the 405 or the I-5, and then all of a sudden you see these towers coming up, because Seattle has always had, I mean, when I say always, going back 100 years, some of the tallest buildings west of Chicago are in Seattle. And there's a skyline. And particularly at sunset or something like that, as the lights are just going on, it looks great. It's got the nickname the Emerald City, right? Because this is emerald green, and it tends to be green. And okay, lots and lots to like and admire. But now all you see is just covered. I mean, from literally miles of it, of utterly meaningless graffiti. And people who think that this is some kind of artistic expression haven't seen it. Because it's not. It's just a desire to destroy and disrupt. King 5 TV has a news report on actually bringing a weapon of combat into the fight against graffiti. Really? Yeah, really. Drones. How can drones be used to remove graffiti? Listen.
If you've driven along the I-5 corridor between Seattle and Tacoma, you've likely seen this on your commute. Walls tagged from top to bottom with graffiti. Graffiti has been a consistent problem on the state's freeways, and it's becoming more expensive. Numbers from WSDOT show that the costs of cleaning up graffiti increased significantly in 2020, then shot up again last year.
It is everywhere.
But Representative Andrew Barkas has an idea on how to deal with the illegal art.
Drone technology is expanding, and there are actually drones that you can load with paint and paint over this.
Earlier this year, Barkas introduced HB 1989, which creates a $1 million pilot program that utilizes drones to paint over graffiti. The program also explores different paints and coverings that could be used on infrastructure projects that prevent spray paint from sticking. Traffic cameras could also be used to spot graffiti artists while they're tagging walls.
Today, you would have to send out a crew with a high lift truck and eight people, and you know, it just takes too long and it's too expensive. One person with a drone can paint over an area, and if you have a fleet of those, then you're staying on top of it, you're cleaning it up, and you're not allowing it to stay present for a long period of time.
Last week, Governor Inslee signed off on the project.
Okay, will this work? It's deeply questionable. A piece that appeared in another local newspaper says that Washington may soon employ aerial drone technology to deal with a growing graffiti problem on highway infrastructure. Lawmakers passed a bill that set aside $1 million for a Department of Transportation pilot program focused on finding new ways to erase spray paint from road signs, walls, and bridges. The proposal passed 96-1 in the House and 38-11 in the Senate, with only Democrats opposed. Why are Democrats opposed? Because somehow this is taking away the precious artistic expression of some of their constituents? And how outrageous. As the top Republican on the House Transportation Committee, the bill sponsor, Andrew Barkas, whose voice you just heard there, Republican from Olympia, said he had spent time traveling up and down the state's highways. It became clear to me that the graffiti on all of the beautiful work we've been doing is getting out of control. And there are a lot of new pillars and a lot of which actually are very well designed. Some of them made to carry that light rail scam, but that's a different story. But it's really... The idea that it's $1 million with the billions that I think taxpayers would be happier if were actually spent on dealing with this problem, it can really change the way you feel about your community, about your surroundings, and which is why some of the more desirable places, suburban enclaves, somehow are able to avoid graffiti. And part of this, and this was true in our neighborhood when we were still living in L.A., we were active with people who were very determined as soon as some graffiti would appear, there was this gray paint, you just paint over it. And apparently in the world of graffiti animals, that's considered a big embarrassment. If you've tagged something, you put your name up or your symbol or whatever it is, and then within 24 hours, somebody's come over and painted it over, gotten rid of it, cleaned it up. That's considered a big defeat for the forces of chaos. Okay, more about the forces of chaos and what to do with them. And it's very interesting to hear some letters to the editor that came in regarding this new idea of using drones in the anti-graffiti fight. We'll be right back on the MedVed Show.
It's outrageous what's going on out here.
The Michael MedVed Show. More of Michael MedVed in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved show, talking about the problem of graffiti, and it's not just Seattle, though it's particularly dramatic in Seattle, because this city, honest to goodness, we came here, we moved here in 1996, and Seattle used to be graffiti free. Correct. Of the whole idea of the Emerald City was not the trash can city. And now there's some good news and more good news, because I think people, there's sort of a basically the idea there's nothing we can do. But if enough people are concerned about this, then even our elected representatives end up trying to do something about it. Story says Seattle can once again enforce its anti-graffiti laws following a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturning a previous court's finding that the statute was unconstitutional. It's a victory for Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison, who's terrific. She actually, believe it or not, is a mainstream Republican, dare I say it, who replaced an ultra-lefty city attorney named Pete Holmes. But in any event, Ann Davison made public disorder and specifically graffiti crackdown central to her campaign 2 years ago. So let's do something about it. And now with this court decision allowing that, it can make a real difference. Graffiti is a massive problem for our city, costing taxpayers, businesses, and residents millions of dollars while creating widespread visual blight, Davison says. We must have as many tools as possible to protect neighbors and residents impacted by graffiti. What I think of graffiti and how deeply and incredibly obnoxious it is I think of where you go on Mercer Street. When you're coming downtown and you go off on Mercer Street, which is the way you go to the Space Needle or the Pacific Science Center or to the Sculpture Park, the Olympic Sculpture Park, which is beautiful. And they did just a great job of building that overlooking Elliott Bay and Puget Sound and West Seattle. And you can see out to the Olympic Mountains. And for people who haven't been to Seattle, it's really a beautiful spot, but as you're driving there, you have to go through this Mercer Street tunnel, and it has a lot of yellow tile that used to be pretty cool. You'd go into the tunnel, and there'd be yellow tile walls, and they seemed to clean it, but now it's literally every square inch of those yellow tiles are covered with painting and initials and just defacing of every kind. And it would cost a fortune to clean it up. And of course, it would be pointless to clean it up if it's going to be trashed again immediately. And there's a letter that was sent in, And I think this speaks for a lot of people. It was a letter from someone named Mark, who wrote, "Nowhere in this report does it say that our representatives in the legislature considered the other method of dealing with this criminal blight on our communities, such as how about preventing it in the first place? How about painful punishment, accountability, arrest, and jail for those who take their spray cans out at night and deface our surfaces with their ugly gang tagging? Oh no, we wouldn't want to do that. Charging these expressive artists with a crime and jail time would only make them feel bad, and we wouldn't want that." Then he puts in parentheses sarcasm. Graffiti is a graphic example, pun intended, of a community that has control of its rule of law. But it seems that in the legislature, the rule of law is a pejorative term these days, these recent years. And as we have seen, when you do not enforce the rule of law, this is what you get. More laws broken, more chaos, unsafe communities, graffiti is an outdoor advertisement that in this community you don't have to fear accountability for breaking the law. And then there's another piece that came in from a writer named Clinton who says, I have a plan to suggest equip some of the drones with night vision technology and really strong pepper spray to hunt down and squirt lots of the artists caught in the act of vandalism. Or better yet, catch the idiots and put them in little graffiti cleaning chain gangs as punishment. And there was another story about a local prolific graffiti artist who was arrested and was condemned to 80 hours of cleaning up. It's just all extraordinary. There was also this headline. A Seattle graffiti artist, aged 14, is struck and killed by monorail while spraying tag on city's wall. Isn't that unbelievable? And then this from 2024, January 12th, with hashtag vandalism, hashtag Seattle, hashtag tagging. A graffiti tagger who was accused of causing hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage to public and private property in Seattle has been ordered to spend 80 hours. If it's hundreds of thousands of dollars, why just 80 hours? How about 800? Has been ordered to spend 80 hours cleaning up graffiti in the city, according to a plea agreement. Casey Kane, who's 37, entered a guilty plea to a felony charge of malicious mischief and will avoid further jail time in exchange for the community service ordered by the court. Kane's graffiti tag, Eager, has been painted thousands of times on buildings and public infrastructure around Seattle. Okay. Wouldn't more than 80 hours be appropriate, really? Because you're talking about an eight-hour day. If you have an eight-hour day, you're talking about 10 days total. And for hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage. Meanwhile, there was this news report. Well, we'll get to it because there is more. The idea that there is a push by the left, which, by the way, has been losing its dominant power in the city of Seattle, at least to some extent, with a more moderate city council. But a push to end all juvenile detention facilities. So what does that mean? That they actually go to adult jails? No, it means nothing. It means that nothing happens. We will be right back on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show.
Outstanding.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Okay, the report is on the Michael Medved Show that the amount the state of Washington spends on graffiti cleanup every year has been on the rise, hitting a peak in 2020 of more than, Jeremy, what do you think? The state spending on graffiti cleanup. This is not city, local spending. It's the state of Washington.
$100 billion.
That would be probably more effective. It's a total of $700,000. In the that was at a peak of in 2020. And why did it peak then? It's because graffiti's gotten so much better? No, it's worse than ever. They write, graffiti has struck more difficult to reach places, too. Last February, for example, two overhead signs on Interstate 5 near State Route 512 in Tacoma were defaced, and they cost between $40,000 to $50,000 to replace. Because and why they have to be replaced? Well, because they were defaced. That's it. The department must also take a look at new ways. This, according to this legislation that was passed, that allows them to use drones, that will look at new ways that it can identify people who damage property. An original version of the bill would have required the department to use its tolling and work zone cameras and some of these drones to do this. But in committee hearings on the bill, the department expressed concerns with the requirements and said, we do have a large network of cameras, but we don't have people who can look at all the cameras at one time. Okay. This is, really? This is part of the idea. And then there was a piece, actually, that was put up in 2014. And this is June 10, 2014. KUOW, the National Public Radio Station, associated with the University of Washington. They had the thrill and addiction of Seattle graffiti artists. Is it street art or just graffiti? Many American cities have tried to curb the practice of tagging, and in most places it's associated with gang activity. In Seattle, that's generally not the case. Well, glad to hear that, but is that still true? And how do they know it's generally not the case? I mean, again, people who study this and look at it. And, oh, yes, and then there was a recent report from Como News. This is news about the push to end all juvenile detention facilities in the Northwest. Listen, clip 13.
An advisory committee has been working on the steps to close the King County Judge Patricia H. Clark Children and Family Justice Center in 2025 in a push for zero youth detention. Just last month, King County Executive Dow Constantine said that would not happen next year and that the proposal would not move forward until at least 2028. But he still supports closing the Family Justice Center.
Nobody is saying that there's not a need for detention. The question is, what does that detention look like?
The latest reports from law enforcement across the region show a surge in violent crimes involving teenagers, like robberies and car thefts, fueled by social media. According to the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs, more than 6,000 juveniles were arrested statewide in 2022. Nearly half of those kids were between 13 and 15 years old.
We want to, work with our community, our school districts, our prosecuting attorney's office to wrap support around young people before they're engaging in any type of harmful behavior.
Now, we did check back in February. In King County alone, there were 112 youth detention beds. 42 of them were full.
Okay. And you heard that they were talking about 6,000 crimes, and they only have 100 detention beds, and they want to get rid of those? Honestly, at a time when youth crime has been spiking, as they just reported in that bulletin, and some of the youth crime very, very serious, then exactly what you need to do is to end all youth detention and just show them a little more love? Uh-huh. This is one of the reasons that people sort of look at politics and kind of assume nothing can possibly get better. But every once in a while you hear about something that does seem to make sense, and that is actually kind of surprising. And this is a story not from the United States. It's from one of our closest allies in the world. Germany. And they have those seeking German citizenship could soon have to answer test questions about anti-Semitism, Germany's commitment to Israel, and the nature of Jewish life in Germany. The catalog of more than 300 questions, which citizenship test questions can be selected, from which they can be selected, is to be amended shortly, the Interior Ministry said in a statement, pending final approval. New questions, German magazine Der Spiegel reported, are to include, what is the Jewish house of prayer called? Okay, and there, synagogue is the general term, by the way. And there are reform congregations, or often called temple. But generally, a Jewish house of worship would be a synagogue or a Beit Midrash or a Beit Knesset, if you want to get Hebrew about it. They would also ask, what year was the State of Israel founded? 3 years after the collapse of the Third Reich, thank you very much. That's 1948. What is the reason for Germany's special responsibility for Israel? How about the murder of 6 million people? How is Holocaust denial punished in Germany? And it is. And somewhat mysteriously, they would ask who is allowed to become members of the Jewish Maccabiah sports clubs in Germany. Do you have to be Jewish? Answer, no. Anybody is able to join a Maccabiah sports club. Jeremy is suggesting that we ought to have the same questions as entrance requirements for major U.S. colleges and universities, certainly for hiring of professors, such as name the good guys in current conflicts, State of Israel or the Hamas terrorist organization. Who started the current war? Which again, I do think that there's some confusion about that. There's also confusion about another problem. We've talked about graffiti. We talk a lot on the show about homelessness. What about the idea of squatting? There's some action being taken by a pretty dynamic governor, you may remember, named Ron DeSantis in Florida. We'll get to that coming up on The Medved Show.
From politics to pop culture and from coast to coast, this is The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, don't forget about our special super spring sale. That's 50% off either plan, a basic Medhead plan that gives you, if you're a first-year subscriber, it is available to you at just $2.50 a month. It's an extraordinary deal that gives you at any time 24/7. Access to the podcast version of the show to stream anytime you want to, and plus an annual Medhead Plus membership also gives you, at the cost of less than $5 a month, it's actually considerably less than $5 a month, so about, $3.50 it comes to. But in any event, It's a bargain because you then get access to the entire warehouse full at the Medved History Store. And that's terrific, from the American Revolution all the way through the Vietnam War and the greatest controversies in American history, and a lot of the same material from my books, God's Hand on America and American Miracle. And by the way, speaking of an American Miracle, there's going to be another one of those Joy of Marriage webinars that my wife, Dr. Diane Medved, is doing this afternoon, completely free. It's at 4 o'clock after the show, 4 o'clock Pacific time. And all you do is you go to barryshore.com and /marriage. And these webinars have been extremely popular and are now watched all around the world. And you can be part of it. Go to Barry Shore, that's S-H-O-R-E, and /marriage. Okay. The webinars, partially because they're webinars, are not going to be disrupted by protesters. But during a speech on health care yesterday, President of the United States was heckled by pro-Palestinian demonstrators who interrupted his remarks. Listen.
Because the insurance company considered those a pre-existing condition, allowed them to deny coverage. Everybody deserves health care. Be patient with them. They have a point. We need to get a lot more care into the Gaza.
Okay, I'm not sure that President Biden responded to that in the most constructive way, but there's another president. This one, the president of the University of Michigan, whose name is Santo Ono, and he was doing the university's honors convocation on Sunday, and he was unable to finish his speech. He ended up sitting down and called on a colleague to wrap up the event. This is what that sounded like.
This is the 101st year that our most outstanding students have gathered in this extraordinary hall to be celebrated as the University of Michigan's leaders and best. It is a fitting venue to honor our achievements for Thank you very much. Thank you. I would like to, in honor of our students, let's move to the remainder of the program. Thank you very much, everybody.
As we close the formal program today, I invite you to join our honorees for an outdoor reception.
Okay. How would you feel if you were one of those honorees, huh? And that event ended up being just as it was. And meanwhile, Vanderbilt University, there were protesters who occupied the chancellor's office in Nashville at Vanderbilt and trying to shame a black university police officer. Listen, this sounded like, well, clip 19.
You're protecting a terrible man. I hope you know that. You're protecting a terrible man.
And a coward, too.
And a coward, an absolute coward, who is aiding and abetting a actual genocide. 30,000 people are being killed, sir.
That's what you're protecting.
Show your compassion. Show your morality.
What if it was your kids?
Would you care?
It will be your kids. It will be our kids.
Is a job worth it, sir? Is a job worth it?
And you're Black Sword? We're already dealing with this. You can stand
32,000 dead, and you don't care.
You could stand with us right now and be on the right side of history.
But you won't.
Shame on you! Shame on you!
Shame!
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 Shame! Shame.
You are black in America, and you're not standing with the marginalized people of the world. What does that make you? What does that make you? A coward!
Coward!
Shame!
Shame!
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
What's striking about this is Vanderbilt University has, it's a big university, a full university with thousands of students, I believe more than 10,000. And what you're hearing in this demonstration is a half dozen people. And just because they have such a sense of their own superiority, there's also the Toronto mayor, whose name is Olivia Chow. This is in Canada, was interrupted at an iftar reception, which is a reception celebrating the month of Ramadan, the holy Islamic month that we're in now. It sounded like this, clip six.
8 minutes, 7 minutes.
I have something very important to say, because there can be no iftar with politicians complicit in the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. Yeah. Mayor Olivia Chow, you represent the interests of the people of Toronto. It is your duty to advocate for the demands of Palestinian Canadians and their allies to our provincial and our federal leaders. Since the genocide in Gaza began, Olivia, you have perpetuated harmful...
I just want to say that October...
There's more. This is a real problem that is sweeping the country, and it's going to have a very profound impact on the presidential race, it seems to me. And depending upon which candidate handles it well, I don't think that either of the two candidates have really come to grips fully with the extremism and the hysteria that is going on. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the ongoing efforts to try to improve the situation with voices from Israel and from the United States political system. And speaking of the political system, there's updates on the presidential campaign, the introduction yesterday of Robert Kennedy's running mate, Nicole Shanahan, and much more. Also, a question, who are the RFK voters? That's assuming that all those people, ranging close to 10% of Americans, who say they're going to vote for Robert Francis Kennedy Jr., are actually planning to do so, and will in fact do so. We'll also talk a little bit about the abortion pill hearing yesterday. The question would be, well, there's even in Mother Jones, they asked the question, will RFK Jr. and other third-party candidates help doom democracy? May democracy continue to bless and to flourish here in this greatest nation on God's green earth.